We look also enthusiastic. Ah, now let's fight the Kalisa. Tau kotame. Life is so hard, huh? Kalisa is giving us a hard time, yeah? And we welcome them and say, yes, yes, my Lord, yes, my Lord. Just like masochists. And they let them torture us. India, huh? Oh, I'm not happy, I'm unhappy, I'm not well, yeah, my body is not well, this is not well, that is not well, the future is open, yeah, the past is gone, yeah, my young body is gone, I have only the old body. And what, yeah, what has that to do with the citta? Peter, what has it to do, yeah? What has the car to do with the driver? Are they not two different things? But of course we don't know that we have a driver in this body. We still believe, you know, I mean, we are born in a car, we die in the car, so we have to be the car, huh? We never got out of the car. That's not the way. I mean, the Lord Buddha came, you know, knocked on the window of the car and said, get out! Look, you know, look that this body is not yours. Get out of this body. Have a look. See, the body is just, you know, body. It is born, just like everything in this universe, it is born and it will die. All what we do is, you know, take care of it. Take care of it. Just like we take care of our car, When the car needs some gasoline, you know, we put in some gasoline, When the car needs some oil, we put in some oil, When it needs water, then we need water. When it is dirty, we wash it, So what is the problem, Why do we put all our energy, you know, in maintaining this body? We work for the body. No? I mean, you work 8 hours a day. For the maintenance of this body. And then when you come back from work, you're so tired. You don't even have time to live. And when we stop working and getting retired, you know, I mean, this body has no energy anymore left. So, I mean, we spend all our life, you know, working for this body, and in the end this body dies, you know, whatever care we take of this body, we exercise this body, you know, we give it the best nutrition we can, you know, it still dies. No matter what, No matter what we do, this body dies. So don't associate with this body. Take care, just like you take care of your car. Whatever it needs, you know, give it. Give it some food when it's hungry, you know. Give it sleep when it's tired, and so on. Give it clothes when it is cold, And give it medicine when it is sick. But you know, get disassociated with that you are the body. That gives us such a relief. We don't constantly have to worry about the future. Do I have enough tomorrow to eat? Do I have enough money, you know, that I can last until the age of 80 or whatever? Believe in karma. Whatever we have done, will come back to us. Be it good or be it bad. That is the important thing. We cannot change the situation. We cannot change, we cannot change if somebody gives us a job. Either we find a job because of our karma, or we don't find a job. also because of our karma. We have little money because of our karma, or we have lots of money because of our karma. Yeah? We have a good body and healthy body because of our karma. We have a sick body because of our karma. And there's nothing that we can in this life, you know, to change the appearance of this body. This is something which we should realize. Yeah? We take care, the best take care, we can take care of this body. Yeah? And when you live here in the monastery, I mean, how much hours do you need to take care of this body? 2 hours? Yeah? 1 hour in the morning for eating, yeah? And then 1 hour, you know, taking a bath, you know, taking a shower and sweeping and cleaning up your place in the monastery. Yeah? And then you still have 22 hours, you know, for practice. For looking after the, you know, looking after the driver of this body. Yeah? But we forget that. And it is so easy to forget it, I don't... It's not an admonishment. I mean, it's so easy to forget, yeah? about life. What is the purpose of our life? Why are we born? Yeah? So easy. Because we have to work for this body. Yeah, we have to earn money, you know, to buy the things that we need for this body. And so we get lost into the cycle. We never reflect about, what is the purpose of my life? What is it? Why was I born? Why was I born in the state I was? Yeah? Why was I born in this family? Why was I born in this country? And so on and so on. It all depends on our karma. The Thai people, you know, have a very good fortune. You know, they are born in a Buddhist country where the explanation, you know, comes to them, you know, at the age of 4 or 5. Yeah? Or sometimes even at the age of... Yeah? When they are just born, you know, I mean, the mothers bring them on pindapat, on arms round, you know, to put some food in the bowl of monks. Yeah? So they learn it from the beginning of their life that there is something else. Yeah? Where do we have that in the West? Where are all these monks, you know, that turning up in the beginning of the morning? Yeah? In the morning, yeah? Where are all these monks, you know, that remind us, you know, there is something else in our life than just work and die. Yeah? And if we have a little bit of time, you know, entertain ourselves. Where are these monks, you know, in the West, huh? In Austria, in Germany, in Switzerland, in Hong Kong. You see a lot of these monks running around, going on pindapat? Hardly any. Even in Indonesia, Canada, wherever you come from, Singapore, you don't see these things. Yeah? And when you look at it, when you look at the life of the Lord Buddha, you know, when he was still the prince, yeah, he was asking these questions. Yeah? He was surrounded always by young people, you know, by pleasant food and so on and so on. But he was locked into the palace. Yeah? So he was interested, you know, like every one of us is interested, what is outside of this palace? Yeah? So he sneaked out, yeah. And then one time he saw a sick man, one time he saw a dead man. Sometimes, you know, he saw a man, you know, a person who was really sick, yeah, and moaning and groaning and so on. And then he saw a birth, yeah. And he said, Jesus, does everybody have to be born? Does everybody have to die? Does everybody get sick, you know? And does everybody get old? But he didn't have the way out. Until the last time, you know, he saw this recluse who does not behave like everybody else. He saw this recluse and said, why is he living a different kind of life? Why is he not living the same kind of life as the people in the village or the villager? So he was getting interested until he decided, okay, let's become a recluse and look for it. And then he became a recluse. He cut off his hair and he went into the forest and then he went to one teacher, you know, learning the lower chanas, the four rupa chanas, and then he decided, okay, whenever I come out of a chana, nothing happened. Yeah? It was very nice in the Chinas, but when I come out, everything stays the same. So what is the purpose of it? And then he asked the teacher, do you have a, is that all? Is there nothing else? Yeah, there must be something else. There must be, you know, there must be some way out. Yeah. And he said, no, that's all what I can teach you. But I know of a teacher who teaches other things. You know, go and see him. Yeah. And then he went to another teacher who taught him the Arupa Chanas. Yeah. And then the same thing. You know, after he mastered the Arupa Chanas, whenever he came out, you know, everything was the same. He said, that cannot be the way. Yeah. I want to find the end of death. I don't want to be born again. Yeah, I don't want to go through the cycle of birth and death and birth and death, running in a hamster wheel without any purpose. Yeah? Running and not going anywhere. Yeah? Sometimes I'm up in heaven, you know, oh, it's so nice and up in heaven, and then I go down to hell, oh, it's so terrible in hell, and then I come back to the human realm or come back to the ghost realm. That is not nice, you know, because I see all the humans, what they can do, yeah. And I want to do the same thing, but you know, I can't really create these things that we as human beings with this body can create. So we get envious, yeah, and then we come back at the human. Yeah. Then we do enough good and bad karma so that we might go to, you know, to heaven and go to hell again. And we have, how often have we done? How long do we do it? Yeah. I mean, how many lives have you lived? Huh? Look back a little bit. How often have you been in hell? I mean, I've been in hell, oh, huh? Such a long time, sometimes extremely long. Huh? You can't even see the beginning and the end of it. And sometimes it was shorter. And then you come back, you know, and then you go back again. Oh. It is like taking a hot shower and a cold shower, yeah? Always, yeah? Never. Yeah? There's no end. And the Lord Buddha, you know, tried to find way out. Yeah. So he went to the teachers, and then he saw, you know, none of these teachers that were around at the time, and there were lots of teachers in India at his time. None of these teachers knew a way out. Yeah, out of death. So he tried to find it until he found. Yeah. Until you found the path, you know, the path of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, the Majjhima Patipatthana, the middle way of practice, to the end. And then he taught the way. And if some of you have read the suttas, it's interesting how he presented himself. I am the Tathagata. I am the one who sees everything. Quite arrogant, huh? Quite conceited, would we say. So everybody who sees something, you know, I mean, who knows something, is called arrogant. No, I mean, the people accepted it, you know, and they flocked around him. Lay people flocked around him. Lots of supporters, they flocked around him. Monks, lots of monks flocked around him. And tried to gain, you know, to the four fruits, of practice. To Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahant. But coming back, you know, I mean, the essential thing, if we are stuck in the life and everybody around us lives the same kind of life, yeah, maybe somebody has a better car or bigger house or nicer house or has lots of houses or lots of cars, I mean, it doesn't change anything. We're still stuck in this world, yeah? And we don't know, we are not taught, you know, from the beginning of our life, you know, that there's a monkhood there, or there are some recluses, you know, who are trying to live a different kind of life. And when we are in the West, you know, I mean, we get deluded, you know, that is everything. Yeah? Even though, you know, some of us, you know, wake up, you know, maybe in the 70s we woke up, you know, and said, there must be something else, yeah? The hippie generation, yeah? What you can remember there. They wanted to find something else, yeah? Love, yeah? And so on. And what did they find? They went back into the hamster wheel, yeah? They went out for a short time. And then they came back. Yeah? Brian, you remember? Just a bit. Make love, not war. But, yeah, they come back to it, yeah, and when they come back to it, you know, all what they can do is, you know, get the money until they die. Huh? And what's the purpose of it? Because we don't have this religion. I mean, Christianity doesn't teach us about birth and death, you know, and rebirth. Huh? And it is not, in Christianity nowadays, nobody believes it, yeah, anymore. The young generation doesn't go to church, you know, only the old people, you know, believe in God. Yeah. So we are really missing out, you know, on the example that there's another way of life, that there's another purpose in life. And that is, you know, what we see when we come here to Thailand. Every morning we go, and no matter what village it is, yeah, we go and see these monks going, yeah, going on Pindapara, going on Armstrong. And then if we follow them, then we see, you know, they have a place to stay. Some of them stay in a cave, some of them stay in the forest, you know, just come out of the forest, yeah, to collect the food and then go back in the forest. Most of them stay in monasteries. Yeah, and then we go to the monasteries, hear their teaching, and then we get a little bit. Familiar with the teaching of the Lord Buddha. Or with the life of monks. Monks are recluses, you know. I mean, they distance themselves from the world. They shut down their sense doors that are constantly open in the world. You just go through the market, you smell, you see, you hear, yeah. All these senses, they're constantly bombarding you. How can you not constantly be reacting to it? It is very difficult to stay completely calm, yeah, in the midst of a circus or in the midst of a market or in the midst of a shopping mall, because your attention is constantly drawn out. And if you're not in a shopping mall, then you have the shopping mall, you know, just right in your pocket. It's called nowadays smartphone. Yeah? I mean, we're constantly distracted with the smartphone. Oh, there's a new message. Please look at me, yeah. Or there's somebody calling me, please look at me, and so on. I mean, people must be crazy, you know. I mean, this world, you know, I mean, keeps us constantly on the go, on the go, on the go, so that we don't have time anymore to think, what is the purpose of this life? We don't have the time anymore because we are so pressed into this, into the scheme, into the society. And the society actually, you know, I mean, is. The purpose of the society is not to make us think. Because the moment, you know, the masses of the people start to think, you know, there's a revolution. Huh? Well, why I'm doing it? Huh? Think about the 70s or end of the 60s, yeah? The student revolutions when they thought, you know, I mean, there's something wrong with the system. Now, we don't have any time to think about that there's something wrong with the system. So? We tuck our head, you know, okay, I have to work harder, yeah. Isn't that? Huh? We don't have time to think. Huh? When I grew up, you know, we had lots of time to think. Because there was no entertainment. The entertainment factory that you have nowadays in your pocket, you're called smartphone, you know, I mean, you never get bored. Huh? And only when you get bored, you start to ask questions. Huh? Or you try to find something, you know, that what to do. I mean, maybe you remember, you know, the times, you know, Saturdays, Sundays, you know, what was it, in end of 60s, beginning of the 70s, you know, when all the shops were closed, yeah. The only thing that happened on Sunday afternoon was a football game, yeah. 4 o'clock, yeah. All the bars were closed, all the restaurants were closed, you know, nothing, the shops were closed, they had nothing to do. Boring, absolutely boring. Yeah? Wasn't there a song, A Boring Sunday, on the boring Sunday afternoon? So we had time to think, we had time to engage with each other. Nowadays people don't engage with each other. So it's getting worse and worse and worse. We are more and more pressured. And that's actually, you know, good for the society or good for the people who rule society, because, I mean, it's much easier to manipulate and to steer the people in the direction that they want to. But now we come here to this monastery and then Alumpa asks us, you know, what is the purpose of my life? How do I know? How do I know what is the purpose of my life? I would have to think. Why was I born? With what kind of thought did I came into this life? What did I want to do with this life? We forgot it, because, I mean, the life keeps us busy all the time. Just for our livelihood, we have to work so much. Right? So it keeps us busy all the time. And it demands even more and more and more. was very interesting when I was closing to finish the high school. Yeah, I had a grandfather who had a PhD in math, and then looked at his PhD thesis. That's just what we learned, you know, in the last year of high school. I mean, it was so interesting, you know. He made a thesis about that, what we learned in the last year of high school. But that was 80 or 90 years ago, where he got his PhD. So even now, nowadays, you know, it is even worse. You know, you probably, you know, at the end of the high school, you learn the things, you know, that I learned in the third or fourth semester. So, I mean, it keeps up, you know, demanding. Yeah? And the more life is demanding, the less time we have to think. Yeah? In the less time we think about our life. What is the purpose? Yeah? Why are we here? Why are we in the situation we are? Yeah? Why is this person in this situation? Why is the other person in that situation? Yeah? Why is one person poor and one person rich? I mean, what is the mechanism of this universe? How does it work? We don't know. We heard a little bit about karma. And when we read some of the suttas of the Lord Buddha, he explains it. He explains a person who is very generous, in his next life he becomes rich or very rich. Depends on his generosity. And the same thing. If a person is very respectful in this life, I know indeed he will earn a lot of respect in his next life. And if he is full of hate, yeah, I mean in German actually, you know, I mean if he's full of hate, you know, he becomes very ugly in his next life. That's why we don't like actually ugly people. We try to distance ourselves. And sometimes we can see, you know, ugly people still have a lot of hate in them. Sometimes they change. Hass und hässlich? Huh? Peter? German is a beautiful language. There's a lot of comma inside. Lot of idioms, lot of words, you know, that depend, give a meaning. And people who lie. I mean, what did the Lord Buddha say? The next life, you know? They will stink out of their mouth. In order, you know, for other people to be deterred not to listen to them too much. Yeah? I mean, it's a calming result. And there's a lot, you know, I mean, there's, if I remember correctly, there's only one sutta about, you know, where he talked about karma a little bit. There are two suttas where he talked about, you know, what kind of hells there are. He didn't want to talk about it, you know, but the people pressured him. So he talked, you know, two suttas, yeah? Where he talked about all the hell. Yeah? Well. So karma is that why we are born in the situation we are. Yeah? And it is karma, you know, if somebody gives us a job, it's karma if somebody rents us a house or apartment, it's karma, you know, if we earn a lot of money or if you earn little money, because some people, you know, do the similar kind of work, you know, earn a lot of money, you know, and we earn a little money, you know, and then we get envious, why does he earn more than me, yeah, and so on. Because of our karma. Everything, yeah, everything depends on our karma. And if he accepted, if he could accept it, it is easy to accept the good karma. There's no questions, yeah. If you win in the lottery, you know, we don't have any trouble accepting that, yeah. But, I mean, Peter comes from Austria, you know, it's very Catholic. If people, you know, if something bad happens to people, they always run to church, isn't it? Please, Lord, take this, you know, take this burden away from me, yeah? And when they win in the lottery, they don't run to the church and ask the Lord to take the lottery win away from them. Huh? I mean, it shows us, but we never look, yeah? We only look at one side, we don't look at the other side. Yeah? I mean, we only see one part of the coin, you know, mostly the head, yeah? We don't see the tail. Yeah? And that's the same thing. We only want, you know, we attribute all the good things that come to us, you know, it is because of my own doing. Yeah? But the bad things, it's always of somebody else's doing. Yeah? Somebody, we can always blame somebody else. Be it our family, you know, be it our father who treated us so miserably, yeah, or our mother, you know, or the government, or whatever, or the school teacher and so on. We can blame it on everything. Whatever happens bad to us, we blame on other people. Whatever is good, happens good to us, that is our own, of our own doing. No, everything is of our own doing. And if we understand it, if we learn to accept it, you know, life, this kind of life becomes so much easier. Yeah, sometimes bite your teeth, you know, and say, And also, and actually what you can do is, you know, you can turn the situation around. Yeah, say, oh, what can I learn from this situation? And then it becomes interesting, and if it becomes interesting, it's not difficult. Nothing is difficult in this world. Actually, we only make it difficult through thinking, why does it happen to me? Why, you know, I want this, you know, and this doesn't come. Yeah? That's what makes life so difficult. If you just accept the things there, yeah? I mean, this morning there was sun, you know, now there are clouds and maybe there is some rain. Yeah, if you accept the way it is, you know, if we accept the nature as it is, if you could accept, you know, I mean, the present moment as it is, we wouldn't be unhappy. We would be constantly satisfied. Yeah? But we can't. And that is the problem. Because there is somebody within us, you know, it is called avijja, or the forces of avijja, or the the fingers of avijja, you know, who constantly mistreat us, who constantly tell us, I want this, I want that, I don't like this, I don't like that. Huh? We hear that 24 hours a day. And the only thing what we learn to do is, yes, my Lord, you're right, yes, my Lord, I need this, yes, my Lord, I need that. We never question, you know, what we need. Do I really need this? What is the purpose of it? What is the purpose of my being, yeah? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? And what is the result of my doing? Yeah? I mean, we call ourselves homo sapiens, but we don't do the things that a homo sapiens should do. A homo sapiens, you know, is a person who is reflective, who knows what he's doing, why is he doing, and what the result of his doing is. Isn't that? Yeah? When was the last time, you know, how many years ago did we do that? Once? Twice? Yeah? No, we just go ahead and do it, you know, because the voice says, I need to go here, yeah, and then we go, yeah. I need to do this, then we do this, yeah. I need to get more money, then we work hard, you know, to get more money, yeah. We never question that, yeah? We don't reflect, yeah. And if we don't reflect, how can we call ourselves homo sapiens? We should call ourselves biological robots, yeah. Yeah? Conditioned. We are conditioned. If, then, else. Yeah? If I see my mother, I react like this. If I see my father, I react like this. If I see my boss, you know, I react like this. Yeah? And so on, and so on, and so on. Yeah? If I come to this country, you know, I will be like this. If I come to that country, I will be like this. That's conditioning. Yeah? That's That is the language of programming. Yeah, if then that is the key of programming. If the condition is met, then you know you follow a lot of statements. Yeah, and within these statements there can be another if. You know, it is very very complicated. But it's still, look at the robots, look at the automation robots, in the factories. Look at them, how long they are programmed. If it is a complicated task, it takes 3 months to half a year to train them, so that they can do it all. Yeah. And how long did it take us, to train this body? We remember it, huh? Learning to walk, learning to talk, learning to think. At the age of 15 or 16, you are finished. 15, 16 years of training this body. Yeah? Remember this? Huh? We don't want to remember this time. It was difficult, huh? Yeah? And when we have a new human life, let's say, maybe in 5 lives we have another human life, where we come back as a human being, then we have to do the same thing. 15 years of training. And sometimes we remember it wasn't our happiest time, Especially school, the the constant struggle with the parents and so on, or with the friends, or being bullied by other people, and so on, so many things, And then we can use this body in full strength for 30 years. At the age of 45, it starts to decay slowly, at the beginning very slowly. This doesn't work, this needs to be repaired, that needs to be repaired, the back aches, and so on. until we are about 80, and then we die. The body slowly, very slowly, falls apart. And the strength of the body, slowly decreases. Look at the old people, with 80 or 90, how they walk. That's what is going to happen to us. Remember? That is what we call a human life, a precious human life. Yes, of course it is precious if you use it for something precious. If you use it, to find the Dhamma. If you use it to find the way out of the hamster wheel, to open the door at least. It is not beyond our ability to open the door. At least, what did the Lord Buddha say? It is very difficult to obtain a human birth. It is very difficult, once you obtain a human birth to find the true Dhamma. Once you find the true Dhamma, to find an Arahant or the Lord Buddha. Three things that are very difficult to obtain. You are born as a human being, you find the true Dhamma, you have the ability, but it depends all on your effort, and your determination. But now we are getting so old. And to find this determination, it is not easy. When we are young, we have more energy, to find this determination and effort. We just go. When I went on Tudong, I just went. I didn't care, what happened. Now I couldn't do the things I did 20 years ago. I couldn't do them anymore. I don't have the strength anymore. I don't have the energy anymore. So you need, in order to fight the kilesas, there is no harder work or harsher work, more difficult work, in any kind of society than the work of a monk or the work of a recluse. Fighting the kilesas. What did the Lord Buddha say? Fighting as a single person, a whole army, is easier than to fight oneself. I think I should do this, to fight this. Who are you to think, What kind of thought is that? It's not me, it's not mine, But if we don't think, what do we rely on, So we have to rely on something. We have to rely on a teacher who knows the path, For most of us, unless, they are born at the time of the Lord Buddha, and the Lord Buddha utters one of the stanzas, you know, and they get enlightened, yeah? But isn't that fantastic? You know, we read it and we love it, you know, and then we wish to be at the time of the Lord Buddha. But you don't know the kind of lives that they have. These people have lived before and how much they trained themselves each life after life after life after life, that they just needed, you know, this click, yeah? Just needed this, you know, this hammer, you know, to hammer the nail in, yeah? How many lives? Everybody thinks, oh, if I'm near, close to the Lord Buddha, you know, I mean, he just releases me, you know. No. If you haven't done the work, huh? If you have not trained yourself, you know, spiritually, to the point where you can meet the Lord Buddha, yeah? And not everybody who met the Lord Buddha got enlightened, or got even to Sotapanna. Yeah? Some of them, yeah, lots of them became Arahant, yeah, lots of them became Sotapanna, Sotakadagami, Sohanagami, yeah, but not everybody. And not everybody, you know, got it in a stanza. Oh, yes, yeah. Anya Kondanya, you understand? Okay, he understood. But the other four, you know, he taught first, you know, I didn't understand it. Yeah? But Anya Kondanya, you know, his wisdom was, you know, as sharp, you know, so he could, you know, he could see the anatta, yeah, instantly the moment the Lord Buddha exposed the Dhamma. Yeah? And the others? What is he talking about? That's how I sometimes feel. What is he talking about? We hear it, yeah, we understand it, but it doesn't get into our heart. Yeah? The heart is still stupid. Yeah? We try, but we are trained, you know, to understand with our mind. We are not trained to understand with our heart. Once the heart understands, that's the end of the matter. Never lets go. It relieves itself. When the heart sees it does something wrong, there's no question, doesn't do it a second time. When the mind sees it does something wrong, sure, the heart still wants to do it. Wants to do it, wants to do it, wants to do it. The mind says, no, it is not good, you know, but the heart says, yes, I like it. Yeah? And that's where the struggle is, yeah? And we have to find the path, you know, we have to find the path that leads us to the end of dukkha, yeah, or the fourth noble truth of sila, samadhi, and panya. And sila, you know, sila are the five precepts, keeping them. Samadhi is the ability to concentrate on one point, yeah. And whenever the mind, yeah, goes out, you know, we bring it back, and we bring it back, and we bring it back, and then we get bored, oh, that is so boring, yeah? Now we bring it back, and we get interested, how is this Buddha? How is the Buddha different from that, from the last Buddha? Or how is the breath different from the last breath? We either stay with the breath, or we stay with the Buddha until we become calm. Once we become calm, when there's no more thoughts and no more memories coming in, we are happy. We are satisfied for the first time in our life, completely satisfied. At that time, we don't wish for anything else. The moment a thought comes up, oh, this is so nice, you know, we are out. And then we go back in, and that, in the time when we stay in Upachara Samadhi or Exa Samadhi, that's where we are really happy, that's where we can get back our energy, recharge our batteries, and then once our concentration is good and the batteries are recharged, then we start to investigate the things that we believe we are. And the things, the five groups that we believe we are, or the five toys that we have, you know, around us, is this body, is feeling, is memory association, is thoughts and consciousness. So we start to investigate. But we start with the main thing. We don't start with consciousness because we can't see. We can't see consciousness arising and ceasing. We need a lot of sati to be able to see it. So we go the path that everybody goes, yeah? When you look at it, we are bound by 10 fetters. Eh? The first 3 fetters is the fetter of doubt, and the fetter of not keeping the sila, not keeping the precepts, and the third fetter is the belief that we, the body is self. Eh? So what is the fourth and fifth fetter? It's greed and hatred. And where is greed and hatred rooted? In this body. So we have to still to investigate the body, yeah? See the loathsomeness of the body, see the burden of the body, whatever, and see the fallacy of the senses that come with the body. Only then, at that end, and at the end of the investigation, can we investigate the non-rupa, or the arupa, khandas. And these are mind feelings, thoughts, memories, and consciousness. Because if we want to investigate thought or memory or things like that, if you don't want to investigate the body, constantly the kilesas will push up the body. Oh, I'm not sitting comfortable. Oh, I'm not, I'm in pain. Oh, I'm this. Yeah? As long as there is the body, as long as the kilesas are still in pushing body and pushing greed and hatred in front of us, we can't even investigate the other thing. It's a fallacy. People believe it, why should I investigate the body? I don't like the body anyway. Don't like means, I'm attached to this body in a negative sense. And this is what lots of people don't understand. They think if they don't like the body, they are free of the body. No! Yeah? If I hate somebody, I want to get him out of my sight. Yeah? If I don't like this body, I want to get it out of my sight. But it's stuck with me. Yeah? No matter where I go, I have to carry it around with me. Dislike and like, are rooted within the body. If you don't investigate the body completely, we can't get free from the body. And we can't, when our investigation of the body is finished, we become a non-returner. That means we don't come back anymore in any kind of realm, except for the 5 anagami realms. And then we just sleep our way until we wake up in Nibbana. 50,000 years. Each of these heavens is 10,000 years. Each of the higher fetters is 10,000 years at most. But we can, of course, make it, within this life. So, it all depends, yeah? If you know the path, then it depends on the strength to be able to walk the path and how fast you walk, That depends, it all depends on you, wherever you reach it at the end of your life. It's not impossible. And it's not improbable. It all depends on you. But just from my own experience here, let me tell you, it ain't easy. You have to do a lot of fighting. You have to do a lot of fighting with pain. You have to do a lot of fighting with these kilesas that constantly want this and want that, don't like this and don't like that. And you have especially the biggest fight is with this body. And with raga tanha, sensual desire. That is just killing, nearly killing. So it ain't easy, but it is possible. So, look, what is the purpose of your life? Now you have the time, now you're in the monastery, now you have the time to think about it, Why am I here? What do I want to do with my life? And if it is worldly, you don't have to get out of the hamster wheel. If you like the hamster wheel, Paint it golden, Put some nice curtains in it, Some nice pictures, Maybe a stereo so that you don't hear the noise from outside. And then run. It doesn't matter, find the purpose of your life. It can be spiritual or it can be, just worldly, just be happy, You know where the things are coming from and you know that whatever you do in this life, you will meet the results of your own doing, in your next life. There's nobody else interfering in your life. Just you. You. And that is the most difficult thing for us to accept responsibility. We don't like to be responsible for our own actions. We like to blame others. We have to learn to be responsible for whatever happens to us is because of our own doing. That's why we have the saying, don't do unto others what you don't want others to do unto you, for whatever happens to you is what you have done unto others. They leave out the second part because we don't like responsibility. But that is the logical conclusion. Okay, so, finish. Questions?
Someone asked me this, and I wasn't able to give a good answer. When you teach about the citta, you explain that you five aggregates disappear.
Yeah.
What remains is the citta.
Yes. The pure citta.
Right. That the citta of every being is essentially the same.
Yes.
So the question was two parts. One, how can it be that all beings have a citta which is essentially the same? And secondly, If that's the case,
the citta is the soul. No. The citta cannot be the soul because soul is something that is personal. I mean, that's how I understand soul. You know, I mean, it depends on how you understand soul. A soul is something, you know, it's an impersonation of something, yeah? And the soul, it is not. It is completely neutral. The citta itself is completely neutral. And when you say... As I said, you know, it is very difficult to to talk about a realm that is not within our common language. That's why the Lord Buddha, for instance, when he talked about Nibbana, you know, where all these arahants are, yeah? The arahants are in Nibbana, you know, they are still there. They are not, they have not disappeared. Just like for the Lord Buddha, to make it easy for us to understand, he said, neither am I, nor am I not. And that is beyond, I mean, how can we grasp that? It is difficult to grasp that. And everything, you know, that is beyond our duality is very difficult to grasp because we don't have any concepts about it. So sometimes he talked about the Nibbana as the extinguished one, yeah? Where the fire extinguished, the fire of greed, fire of hate, fire of delusion extinguished. But sometimes he called it the supreme happiness. Or sometimes he called it the unconditioned. I mean, these are all epitaphs, you know, for Nibbana. I mean, it can mean so many things. And as I explained last time, you know, with a drop of water, you know, every drop of water, the essence of the water is, the essence of the water drop is the same. The form of the water drop is different for every water drop. And that's what makes a being or makes an impersonation of that water drop. Yeah? One water drop is more shiny, one is more dull, one is bigger, one is smaller, one has this form and one has that form. Yeah? But the essence of each of the water drop is water. Yeah? And when it falls back into Nibbana, that is like falling the rain falling back into the ocean. Yeah? I think, I don't know, was it Lungdama boy who said, you know, India has a lot of rivers, yeah? I mean, as long as it is the river called Ganges or whatever the river is called, you know, I mean, there are different rivers flowing through different terrains, yeah? But once they end up in the ocean, they become all the same. That's where you leave your impersonation, yeah? That's where you leave, you know, I mean, the ego that you built up, yeah? I mean, actually, the path to the deliverance is the path to destroy this belief in a self. The belief in a self is wrong. That's what the Lord Buddha said. That why he said it, you know, I mean, it's so easy as a single person to fight a whole army than to fight oneself, you know, because we have to get rid of this notion of self. Only when we become rid of the notion of self, then we can become free. So what do the Westerners do? They define, there is no self? Okay, I'm fine. Now I don't have to do anything, because there is no self, yeah? No, we have to go this harsh path, you know, I mean, in order to be not self. Yeah? The moment this form of I think, you know, like that pops up, you know, there's a self, yeah? Or I have this opinion, or I hate this, or I hate that, or I want this, or I want that, yeah? So you understand it a little bit clearer? Okay. Is there any other questions?
I have a technical question. I practice meditation since 15 years or so, every day.
Yeah?
In the morning and in the evening. And since a year or so, I have, right from the beginning of the meditation, even if I do Buddha or Anapanasati, or even if I do walking meditation, it needs only a minute or so, and some pressure is forming right in the middle of my forehead. It's no pain, but it's some pressure. And I cannot get rid of it. I continue, and sometimes it widens up a little bit. And sometimes it's right like a dog. It's no pain, but I cannot get further. So the whole meditation is observing this pressure in the right in the middle of the brain.
And then
I know this is stupid, but so I ask you, what is it?
You should ask yourself, when you sit now, the next time you sit down, or do a walking meditation. Before you sit down and start concentrating, you ask yourself, what is my objective? My objective is to be with the Buddha. And whatever else comes into the mind is not my meditation object. So only the Buddha. Whatever happens, I'm not interested. I don't care. When you see, when you see the pressure, know that you're not with the Buddha or with the breath at that time. So you lost your meditation object. So you see this pressure, then you return back to the Buddha or back to the breath. You have to become too focused on it. And it is a very tricky part for a lot of meditators. The moment, sometimes, this kind of pressure or this kind of concentration, the concentration can start up and become very strange because we have never actually experienced when we are concentrated. So we could feel this kind of pressure. Doesn't need to happen. But what happens to most of them, there's a feeling coming up, and instead of staying with our Buddha or with the breath, we go to the feeling. And pressure is feeling.
Yeah.
And that's why we lose our meditation. We should notice, okay, there's a feeling, let's go back to the breath. Okay, there's a feeling, let's go back to the breath. Okay, there's a memory, let's go back to the breath. But we can't do that because we are more interested in this pressure and we investigate it and it becomes, sometimes it is light, bright and bright and bright and then we follow this light.
It's not
I understand. I don't say this is for you. I teach a lot of people, I want to make it clear. The problem or the mistake that we do is that we go onto the feeling and want, and either dislike it or like it, and want to investigate instead of going back to our Buddha or breath. Our Buddha and breath is not so interesting. That's why we like these other things that pop up constantly. Understand? Okay. Just go back, just say there's a feeling. You can say there's an unpleasant feeling, or there's a pleasant feeling, or there's a neutral feeling, and then go back. And you will see, if you do that, really determined. I mean, within 2 or 3 days, there will be no pressure anymore. The problem is to go to these feelings. And especially if they are nice feelings, they are lost. Windy, And then only after, oh, that was so nice. Now it's gone,
Previously, I was practicing breath meditation, and I switched to Buddha, and I had read in another teacher's meditation book that, like a candle is, the light comes from one point but fills the whole room, so should your awareness be both centered and broad in the way you're focusing on one point in the body but aware of the whole body.
Yeah.
And so as I'm moving to the Buddha, I'm wondering, I can either sort of like hold it right in front of my eye and think closely about it, but then when I lose it, I sort of don't notice. Or I can hold it far away and like try to catch distractions as they appear but be less focused on the object with some awareness and reserve to sort of preempt those distractions. And my question is, which of those two do you think is a better approach for, you know?
I ask you something. Do you see your mistake?
I suppose I don't.
What is our objective?
To stay with the object of meditation.
Yes. Stay with the object of meditation. Know the object of meditation. Is it good or fast? Is it good or slow? Yeah. I mean, you can combine it with the breathing in. Yeah. Put with breathing in and do with breathing out. Yeah. You can combine until the mind gets more concentrated. You try. The mistake is you try to do something. You try to achieve something what you have read. What will automatically happen if you would stay with the Buddha or with the breath? Then exactly what the teacher describes will happen. In the beginning, you're just aware of the nose, yeah? But once your sati gets more and more developed, yeah? You will become more and more about the breath body. In the beginning, it's just this, and then it becomes wider and wider and wider. But your attention is still on that one point. And the sati widens. Through our concentration, the sati widens. Yeah? It can be, you know, I mean, from my own experience, when I was doing walking meditation, you know, I mean, I was 1 meter ahead, you know, my eyes were 1 meter ahead, but I still knew 3 or 4 meters around me what is happening, without looking. This is how sati can broaden. But if you don't have this concentration, yeah, it will not broaden. Yeah? It will not become wide. You will not see the whole breath body. Yeah? You will still stick with the nose until you develop the sati. Yeah? And the sati is that what radiates. Yeah? But the sati is developed not through concentration. It needs to be developed through knowing what we observe. Okay?
So in the case of the Buddha and the breath at the same time, I'm in the habit of feeling the breath like in the inner lungs, in the chest. And I'm finding my awareness, I'm having food, breathing in, go, breathing out. If my attention, awareness is sort of split 50-50 between the breath and the Buddha, is that okay for the beginning, or should I try to not put the 50 on the breath at all and just...
This is something, you know, I mean, that for each person it will be different, yeah? So, I mean, you have to try it out. I mean, just try to stay with the Buddha, yeah? Or just, you know, if it is too difficult, you know, then use Buddha. But don't go to the breath, don't go to the chest. Stay, the main focus is the Buddha, but you know that the breath goes in, with the in-breath you say Buddha, and with the out-breath you say Do. Stay in this area around your nose. Don't go to the chest because that is distractive. See, but whatever is working, yeah? I mean, for some people, you know, the Buddha is working. For other people, the breath is working. With the breath, a lot of people, because they don't feel the breath anymore, then they go there, you know, to the chest, where the chest actually moves. But that is not a fixed point. Yeah? The nose is a very fixed point. Or around the nose is very fixed point because it doesn't move. Yeah. The only thing that actually is moving, you know, when the air comes in is the hairs of the nose. Yeah. That is the sensation that gives us, you know, that we can concentrate on. But our object is not moving. When we are on the chest, our object is moving. When we play with the Buddha, you know, to be far away or, you know, or to be close, you know, we do all sorts of things now. That's not the objective. Make a Buddha fix, yeah? Wherever it is, yeah? We can't really, sometimes we can't even locate where it is, yeah? Just, you know, just mentally repeat the Buddha until the mind gets calmer and then know more about the Buddha, the quality of the Buddha, yeah? Okay? Problem with us is, you know, we are coming from the West and we need to do something. There is, yeah. That's exactly, what the Westerners thinks, yeah. No, we are here to observe. That's why I said to some people, you know, observe the animals here in the forest, you can't change them. That's where we learn how to observe. And it is so difficult for us, because whatever it is within our, between our fingers, is that what we want to control. So the moment, I mean, we had the breath for all our life, we'll never be interested in the breath, and now that we have the breath, we need to control it. That's wrong. We need to observe it. Observe, an observer, and an object to be observed. And in order not to lose our concentration, we pick a point. And there we stay. Okay? Not easy, not easy. Ain't easy. Okay, so? Finished? Questions? So cool. Yeah? One more? Yeah, he's.
This isn't about meditation, about karma. There's something that, from the suttas, that I've always wondered about, which is that there's a line where the Buddha talks about being born in the deva heavens or the Brahma worlds. If you are born there when you're not an Arya, and it can exhaust your karma, and you might fall all the way back down to even the ghost world or the animal realm or the hell realm.
Yeah.
And but if you enter there as an Arya, then you're safe. And what I wondered is, why is it that the actions that you take while you're a deva or a brahma don't count in creating light karma that would continue to elevate you? Because if you're born as a human and you have the karma to be virtuous, you know, well, Mahabrahma is virtuous through his karma. Why doesn't that count?
Of course it counts.
Then why would they teach that they're going to fall potentially even to the lower realms after this?
Because they have still outkama. I mean, don't you remember when I talked about, you know, when you go on a travel, you pack your bag, and that is from what you live. Yeah, and then after you travel, you go back to your home and you pack your new bag. And you bring something with you, And this is, you know, this is your newcomer, No, I mean, When you remember, when I was talking about Lungda Mahabho, when he talked about his previous life, some of his previous life, he said he was in this kind of heaven for a certain amount of time until his karma was exhausted, then he went to hell because he had bad karma. Then he went to this kind of hell until this kind of karma was exhausted, then he went to another kind of heaven. It wasn't the same heaven. There are 25 different kinds of heaven, So depending on your karma, you go into this heaven or that heaven or that heaven. But you cannot exhaust all your karma, good karma, in one heaven. So there's one heaven for this kind of karma, there's another heaven for that kind of karma, and that is the same thing with the hell. There's this kind of hell for this kind of karma, When this kind of karma is exhausted, you come back, in the ghost realm, and then you come become a human being, or in this case, he went up to another kind of heaven, and then he went back to another kind of, I don't even want to talk about, before he came back as a human being. For most of the people, they go to hell, they come back as a ghost, and then come back as a human being, to make enough good or bad karma, to go down to hell again, and to become a human. That is for normal people. The Arya, An Arya is somebody. What is an Arya? Arya is a noble being. There are four kinds of noble beings. Or, the Lord Buddha specified 8 kinds of noble being. But let's be, with the 4 kinds of noble being. What is a noble being? A Sotapanna is a noble being. Of course, a Sotapanna doesn't go back to hell. A Sakadagami is a, He doesn't go back to hell. He will be at most reborn one more time. Anagami doesn't even go, He doesn't go even to the heavenly realm. He has five different realms for him, just for him. No other being can enter there. And it is out of it, because it's a way out already. So I mean an Arya, a noble being, the Lord Buddha never goes to heaven, he has overcome heaven, And actually when you look at the heavenly realm, a lot of these beings also do bad karma. Why should they suddenly not fight over, this or that, I mean, he has a nicer house, palace, he has a nicer palace, you know. I want this palace, or he has a better wife, you know, I want his wife, yeah. Why should they suddenly change, yeah? Look at the people who are very rich, you know, they can become very mean. So, just because they are born in heaven, you know, enjoy the riches of heaven, or enjoy all the fruits of heaven, doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that all the time they do good karma. And even if they do good karma, this will only result, you know, the fruition of this good karma will result in one of the next lives, yeah? The Lord Buddha said, you know, some times of karma, you know, can take 7 lives to ripen. Yeah? So when this ripens, you know, and once it ripens, you know, it will come back every life, you know, for a certain amount of time. So I mean, it's very difficult, you know, I mean to say, yeah? But for an Arya, a noble being, you know, and the noble beings who are going to heaven is only 2 kind of noble beings. It's a Sotapanna or a Sakadagami. Yeah. Okay? So, you have any questions? What was her name? Soko. You have any questions? Okay. Have a nice trip back, you know, and keep up meditation, daily practice, yeah? That's your... that's your life vest, yeah? In the running water, in the streaming ocean, yeah? I mean, it's lifesaver, yeah? Keep to this lifesaver. Yeah? If not, you know, I mean, you go under. Sooner or later, yeah? Maybe in the beginning you still have the power to swim, yeah? But if you don't catch on to the lifesaver, you sooner or later will lose the energy. Okay, any? Yeah. All right. Huh? More determination, huh? Huh? Life is too easy, yeah, for you. Maybe you should go back to the world for a few months, you know, and to see, you know, this dukkha, yeah?